Our fifth case for today is Ferraro v. Best Buy Stores, 12-26-16. And we'll hear first from Mr. Goril.
Is it Best Buy or Hewlett-Packard?
It's everybody. Best Buy, Hewlett-Packard. I guess it's just Hewlett-Packard at this point.
That's what I used.
Yeah. So Ferraro against Hewlett-Packard.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning.
Opposing counsel. My name is Christopher Goril, and I'm arguing today on behalf of plaintiff appellant Patricia Ferraro. To clear up some of the court's confusion early on, Best Buy was disposed of earlier in the litigation, and they are not a party to this appeal.
Right. So I have an initial question for you just to tidy up. This case, of course, winds up in federal court through removal, and it's hard for me to find in the pleadings where excess of $75,000 shows up. Is there anything to make us think that the damages Ms. Ferraro suffered will meet the jurisdictional amount?
I do believe, you know, I came in at the appellate stage. Opposing counsel may be best to speak on this issue. However, I do believe the medical bills for the plaintiff, for Ms. Ferraro, were upwards of about $70,000, I do believe. And I think the parties then agreed that the damages were in excess of $75,000.
Okay.
As a part of removal.
All right. I may follow up on that. And my other sort of preliminary question for you has to do with the fact that the district court actually rules on both of the theories for the design defect, both the consumer expectation test and the risk utility test. And as I look at the Illinois cases in this, the risk utility test, as the language the Illinois Supreme Court uses, trumps the consumer expectation test because the latter is incorporated into the former and is but one factor. So I'm concerned whether your focus before us on consumer expectation actually has the effect of waiving a sufficient alternative ground for upholding the district court's decision.
Well, Your Honor, I think you're referring to that Michelagic case, Illinois Supreme Court opinion for Michelagic.
That's exactly what I'm referring to.
Upon which it talks about how consumer expectation and risk utility are both methods of proof to show a design defect, and that either party can move under either one of those methods of proof.
But it says that, and then it says maybe there could be a mixed verdict, and then finally it says risk utility trumps consumer expectation. That's my issue.
My feeling with that is that if this case did go to trial, plaintiff would present her case under the consumer expectation theory and would proffer that instruction, that jury instruction, and then defendant and opposing counsel would most likely introduce other factors which would then implicate the risk utility test, and they'd offer that instruction.
But the district court has already found at a summary judgment level that you can't prevail. Now, rightly or wrongly, that's what we're here to decide, but that's what the district court thought. So I'm concerned that you didn't really tackle that in your brief, as I see. Is there any place where you told us why risk utility is not a reason for ruling in favor of Hewlett-Packard?
No, Your Honor. We proceeded primarily under the consumer expectation test theory that either way, whether it be risk utility or consumer expectation, we still believe there's a genuine issue of material fact that whether or not the case ultimately would be a winner for a plaintiff in front of a jury, it at least deserved the time and respect to get to that point.
Okay. Well, you can proceed.
As you know, our case was disposed of on summary judgment by the district court, a strict products liability case. The product in question is an AP power adapter that is powers and charges a laptop computer. And I think one thing everybody can agree on is that the power adapter in question in this case did burn Ms. Ferraro. Ms. Brower received second and third degree burns on her forearm, and there is nothing else in the record to suggest the burns came from anything else other than the AP power adapter. The district court and opposing counsel keep referring to the misuse of the product by Ms. Ferraro. She was charging her laptop while she was on her sofa. She finished using the laptop, closed it, and then placed the power adapter on the arm of the couch as she was wanting to charge the computer, presumably so it'd have a full charge for the next day. She fell asleep on the couch, and for a period of about 7 hours, she was asleep on the couch.
Doesn't she wake up and put ice on it at some point?
If you'll let me continue, Your Honor, I was about to get to that point. At some point during the night, the power adapter fell into the couch and presumably rested on her arm. We don't know how long, because once she did wake up, Your Honor, that was the seven-hour period.
Okay.
And then once she woke up and iced the arm, she was up for the day. She did not go back to sleep after that. We don't know how long the adapter was resting on plaintiff, somewhere between no time at all or 7 hours. That's our time frame that we have. And the misuse of the product, I'm sorry if I could get back, the district court and opposing counsel continue to refer to the Lampkin v. Towner case. As I'm sure you all know, that's the case with the window screens, where the child leaned against the window screen and the court said that was a misuse of the product. The product was intended to keep bugs and dust out of a building, not to support a human being or a child as they leaned against it. Therefore, recovery could not be had. That's one of the situations where whether or not a product is unreasonably dangerous is no longer a question of fact. That overrides that, the misuse of a product. If you're not using the product correctly, then you can't pursue this avenue for relief.
So you're saying, in a sense, that if she'd been trying to use the box on her charger as a heating pad, that might have been an improper use.
I know, correct, Your Honor. I know it wasn't a great analogy. It's the best one I could come up with under the facts in our case. Obvious other misuses.
That's what the expert testified about.
I'm sorry?
The expert testified about heating pad.
One of Ms. Ferraro's expert, one of plaintiff's experts, I think it was Dr. Robert Kuchin, one of the plastic surgeons in the case, he did reference that people have received burns from heating pads. And that coupled along with his testimony that individuals do it sometimes incorporate pain into their sleep, into the dreams that they're having. I think that the district court took that heating pad testimony from Dr. Kuchin and took that and misapplied it to the facts in our case and said, well, that's not applicable because the product in question is not meant to be slept with. It's not meant for external exposure. And therefore, it's not analogous. But I would argue.
But your point, I mean, I understand your argument to be that she was using the charger in precisely its intended use to charge the laptop, and failed to realize that if she made physical contact with it, it would burn her.
That's
but
right.
You know, their point is, well, they aren't supposed to. They're designed in a way to discourage physical contact. They're these big clunky square boxes that aren't supposed to be sitting there on your skin.
Right, and I would agree that they are not. They are designed to be that they're not meant for physical contact. However, another point that opposing counsel kept bringing up in their brief, there was no. She didn't allow the adapter to rest on her skin. She didn't place the adapter on her skin and see how long she could keep it there. She wasn't playing chicken with the adapter. She was sleeping. She was not aware that the adapter was sitting there. This wasn't an intentional.
When you have a consumer expectation test, though, it necessarily invites some discussion about expectation, which can be subjective, but it's supposed to have an objective measure. And here there wouldn't be a logical expectation of having that device against your skin for 7 hours or some period of time long enough to create a burn. That's not the expectation, is it?
I agree with you that you would not expect to be in continuous contact for 7 hours with the adapter.
So if you put the thing in a position where that might happen, so that it slid off the couch. It was in a precarious spot, and she was sleeping, so I assume, you know, moving around. Maybe her expectation should have been that it would slide onto her in a sleep condition, in a sleepy condition.
I would also think that an ordinary consumer, Your Honor, would expect that if by some chance in using this product in its completely intended manner and placing it on the couch, expecting if something did happen and it did fall into the couch and for some reason you were in prolonged contact with this device, I would like to think that the ordinary consumer would not expect to get a second or third degree burn from this product, were that the case.
Okay, you can save your last minute.
Thank you.
Mr. Augusta.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Anthony Augusta on behalf of Hewlett-Packard Company, HP. And to address your question about the amount of controversy, and again, we took over after the close of discovery in this case. The record page 34 and 35, it identifies at paragraph 12 that there was a conversation between Hewlett-Packard's counsel and counsel for plaintiff where they identified that the damages they were seeking were in excess of $75,000.
Okay, that's a little slipshod. I mean, you know, we're not supposed to agree to jurisdiction, but I appreciate the citation. So let me tell you what my concern about this case is, and maybe it just reflects the quality of the people I hang around, but laptops are used in
the lab.
And people, you know, college students sit around on their beds with the laptops. They perhaps nod off from time to time. People sit on couches. I've seen any number of, you know, papers written with somebody sitting on a couch while the thing is plugged in so that it won't entirely lose its charge. And so it seems to me you're not marketing a desktop here. You're marketing a laptop. And so it strikes me a consumer might well expect that the box that converts from the AC to the DC current isn't going to be so hot. It's either A, going to burn them, B, going to set the couch or the bed on fire, or, you know, otherwise be dangerous. So maybe you hang out with more sensible people, but I mean, laptops invite this kind of use.
I agree with the fact that it invites this kind of use, but when we look at it under strict liability and for all intents and purposes the consumer expectation, we're looking at an ordinary consumer.
And I'm looking at an ordinary consumer thinking ordinary consumers think that you can sit on a couch or a bed with the laptop plugged in and charging, because, you know, until the advent of things like iPads, laptops didn't have an infinite battery life. And so if you really were going to sit there and do all of your homework or, you know, read the New York Times or whatever else is you're doing, there's a long time. So people sit there with the charger connected. And if the box gets to 170 degrees Fahrenheit, that's hot. I mean, that's enough to burn you.
It's not. It is not enough to burn you on an instantaneous contact.
I didn't say instantaneous.
I understand, but it's not enough to burn you unless you allow yourself to have prolonged contact to the box.
But why don't people fall asleep in bed or on couches? A lot of people nod off,
right,
you know, for a period of time when they're sitting down.
And if the situation is such that the box is hot enough, your spinal reflex, as Dr. Lee points out, is going to cause you to move away.
It depends what kind of sleeper you are.
Not at all.
If
part of the problem we had here was the amount of, as the district court said, the statements that were made by plaintiff without the support behind it. Dr. Lee said that if sleep is such, you know, a dollar of the senses, why don't you operate on someone when they're sleeping? Because when someone feels extreme pain, they are going to wake up. Dr. Lee, based upon the studies that he did and which were unrefuted and relied upon by this by the district court, said that after 5 minutes, once the converter, the power adapter, which is made of plastic, which has a different thermal conductivity,
you don't need to describe them.
Different thermal conductivity than, say, water, which Mr. Johnson relied upon, it takes time to conduct that heat to your skin. And at the point that your skin hits 46 degrees, so taking a worst-case scenario where the adapter is at 80 degrees Celsius, after 5 minutes, you are going to start feeling extreme pain. And if you feel extreme pain, you are going to move away from it. In order for plaintiff
maybe
to get...
You're already burned, though, by the time you're feeling the extreme pain.
But that's not what Dr. Lee said. The unrefuted evidence is that you don't start to get a burn until 10 minutes or more after. So from the point of feeling extreme pain, you have 5 minutes of continuous contact, extreme pain, before you will start suffering the second to third degree burns that Ms. Ferraro suffered.
Is the contact with the couch or whatever she put it on the arm of the, I assume it has a side that isn't hot.
It's designed to lay flat. And
I've seen everything right. That Judge Wood just described, not for me, but I've tripped over the same wire that my daughter's got, and she's
exactly.
Got the thing plugged in and that sort of thing. So but as far as what the damage it could cause, let's just say it just the couch. Is it possibly that it could set the couch on fire?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe some of the experts tested all sides of the adapter at one point, and I believe if the adapter is uncovered, it doesn't get nearly to the high extremes. It's when it's completely covered, so there's no ventilation, that's when it will get hot.
Well, completely covered, it's internally where it gets hot.
Well, no, I'm saying completely covered externally, so that there's no...
between the cushions of the couch, and now there's no particular ventilation, so maybe it could catch the couch on fire in that...
But that's not in the record, Your Honor.
Well,
but the couch can't feel anything, but it does... You know, there's a certain safety measure anyway.
Correct, but the ordinary consumer is going to feel it and is going to move away.
That's an interesting theory to justify the amount of heat these things are generating.
But it's a product that, when you look at the statements that plaintiff made, and we all know that, in response to motion for summary judgment, you need more than dispute a fact, which I think is all plaintiff is doing, is trying to dispute issues and say, there's a defect, but they have no evidence to establish a defect because their witnesses, Dr. Kuchin with the sleep, which we know doesn't work because you don't operate on someone when they're sleeping.
Well, that's, that sounds to me like a dispute of fact because actually you do put people to sleep for operations and some things are just dulling.
But you don't let someone sleep naturally. You have to put them, as you said, to sleep, not allow them to sleep naturally.
It depends on the operation, I'm going to say. And it also depends on the theory that you can't, while the danger is building up, not wake up because you're dreaming that, you're in a very hot place. You're dreaming somebody's putting a brand on your arm or whatever.
Again, I would refer to Dr. Raphael Lee, who did all of the studies and will tell you that.
Why do we have to believe him as opposed to the other side?
Because they can't refute it. Our job is to come forward with our evidence. Plaintiff has the burden to establish, when we start talking a little bit more on the risk utility, even though that's not where they're at, is that it was for, let me back up, under consumer expectation, if that's what we're talking about, that it was being... now I was getting ahead of myself. I was doing the combination of the two with the risk utility and the consumer expectation. So why do we have to believe Dr. Lee?
Mm-hmm.
The district court looked at all of the facts and all of the evidence and found that his testimony was reliable and found that it wasn't refuted in any way by the plaintiff.
Was there misuse?
I wouldn't call it misuse. I would look at it under the consumer expectation is that it wasn't used in an intended or foreseeable use, and that is to allow your arm to rest on it for a prolonged period of time such that you would get a burn and not move away. So, no, I don't think – I wouldn't call it misuse. I would call it not foreseeable or intended.
So the analysis has to do with the product in its normal setting. Not there was some fact floating through this about Ms. Ferraro having taken some medication or something.
And that's,
And that doesn't matter, does it?
No. And I think the district court even said, no, we're not going to apply that.
Right.
We're applying it in a light most favorable to her, and we don't find any...
The prolonged exposure.
Right. It's
sleep or something.
Right.
Whatever.
What would an ordinary person is going to react to the heat, the pain, withdraw, and not get burnt.
Have some eggshell there. I mean, she you do have the evidence in the record that she does fall asleep and she does wind up with burns. So it's a little tough to say it's impossible, as you've been saying.
I'm not saying it's impossible.
You did say it was impossible. You said this doctor said that it's absolutely impossible. People are always going to wake up.
Person,
she doesn't.
The ordinary consumer is going to respond.
Except we know that she didn't. So
right.
Somewhere there's a gap.
It's saying she's not ordinary, then, I guess. Because it does seem, you know, there's some sort of negligence here, but whatever else, I guess that doesn't enter into it. But this thing accidentally falls in contact with her arm, and if it's already hot, which I assume it was, then this is where I wonder if you could set this couch on fire. If it's four-sided, are all four the same sides at the same temperature?
When it's completely covered, so there's no ventilation, the top, bottom, and the sides, I believe, will get to a similar temperature.
So no matter if it's sitting on something volatile, I guess, that contact point will reach its maximum heat.
Its maximum heat, as measured, I believe, is around 80 degrees Celsius, which here did not cause any fire. And I don't think it's a safe assumption to say that when it fell down, it was at 80 degrees Celsius, because it's not going to get to that temperature unless it's covered. And then it takes time to get there at the same point. Correct.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Gorrell? I think you have about a minute.
15 seconds.
We'll give you a complete minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll use those 15 seconds to say, Justice Wood, I think we hang out with the same kind of people, where they have their computers all over the place, including on bedding and on couches. Further, the burn's not impossible. It happened. There's no other theory of how the burn happened. With that, and with Dr. Lee's testimony, you'll feel pain in 5 minutes, you'll get a burn in 10 minutes. There's a 5-minute gap there where a jury of her peers should be able to say, given all the evidence that we've seen, can we say that she was not likely to get burned in this manner? Something else happened. If that's the case, fine. It's a loser. But it shouldn't be a loser on summary judgment. There's a question of fact. We've argued facts before you for 20 minutes, and I think that's telling in itself. Thank you for the time.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.